The PMAC is back, alive and well, as LSU rises in the polls and in the brackets. Meanwhile, a potentially dynamic development in the college basketball corruption case. LSU baseball undefeated and facing a very challenging week. And Acadiana's very own is the best ever on the collegiate level at his craft. Today, Monday, February 25th, 2019.
Smart working against Bone. Out to Days. Pass to Mays. Ball fake. Drive the baseline. Kick it out. Pass Days. Open for three. Rainmaker. Good. Whistle and a foul. Admiral Schofield trying to close out. Picks up the personal foul, and that cuts the lead 10-7. Setting up the court here is Smart. Just off the timeline. Wants to work. Schofield on him defensively. Got a step. Goes up. Layup good. 25 points for Javonte Smart. Tigers on top. 77-75.
They can't keep in front of him. They can't keep him from getting to the rim.
Schofield will have the ability to run the baseline here with 0.6 seconds. Cavell Bigby-Williams, they'll put him defending on the ball. He'll throw down the court. Williams picks it up, tosses, no good. Tigers win! Tigers win! They upset the number 5 Tennessee Volunteers. And here comes Rick Barnes. He looks like he wants a piece of Anthony Jordan. Orlando Poole going to wipe him away, move him out of the way as the Tigers celebrate inside the Meriden Center. 22-5. They now move to 12-2 in conference play for the Volunteers. It's 24-3. They also 12-2 in SEC action. The race continues for the SEC crown here in 2019. The final, LSU in overtime, 82-80 over the Volunteers of Tennessee on the LSU Sports Radio Network.
Well, there you have it. How about that? 13,581. Not a seat to be had. Peach Palace is back. And how about that? Good afternoon and welcome, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, along with CD, producer extraordinaire in the 237 Roof Studios on the campus of Delta Media and KLWB. Yours truly here, Studio 1A. We welcome you to the Jordy Helfberg Show. We're here for the next 2 hours, and we've got a lot to talk about. Some really, really good, and some a little bit concerning. And we'll get to all of that in just a minute. So the headlines, LSU basketball wins. They are moving up the ranks in the college basketball polls, as now the LSU Tigers are 13th ranked in the AP, 14th ranked in the coaches poll. More significantly, tied atop the SEC leaderboard along with Kentucky and Tennessee at 12-2 apiece. LSU, of course, head-to-head has the advantage over Kentucky and over Tennessee. We will talk with Shelby Mast, our bracketologist, in hour number two after our Hot Topic segment. So we'll find out where he has LSU in his bracket as we are about 20 days away. That's it, 20 days away from Selection Sunday. How about that? Dennis Shaver will join us in hour number two as well. Dennis is the head track and field coach of the LSU Tigers, and his star recruit, Acadiana's finest, Mondo Duplantis, has set the world indoor, or the NCAA indoor pole vault record at 19 feet 5 inches. He did it over the weekend in Fayetteville, Arkansas, at the SEC Indoor Championships. 19 feet 5 inches. He's the best. He's the best collegiate to ever do it. And we'll get the lowdown on Mondo and the LSU track team with head coach Dennis Shaver. Brody Miller will join us in hour number one, and we'll recap LSU's three-game sweep over Bryant. How did the pitchers do? Zach Hess comes up with a win. How much better was he in his second outing than his first? And how did those freshmen do? Hill and Marchand, how did they do in their second appearance? Is there a position battle? What about first base? How's that shaping up? Has Palmieri moved around people in his batting lineup and moved Zach Watson up to the two-hole? How did that all fare? We'll get the lowdown from Brody Miller as LSU faces South Alabama on Tuesday, Southern on Wednesday, and then they head to Austin for a three-game set with the Texas Longhorns. So we have a busy show planned for you and yours, but we begin with the hottest team and the hottest topic, and that is LSU basketball and the magic that Dale Brown envisioned of the Death Dome was back and playing without its best player, playing most of the game with four freshmen on the court, at times with a former walk-on in the lineup. And one of those freshmen, your second leading scorer, only scores 1 point, but contributed in other ways. LSU staged one of the most improbable wins in the history of its men's basketball program. It was remarkable. An 82-80 overtime win against number 5 Tennessee when LSU did not have point guard Trey Waters, who was sidelined by an illness, and Naz Reid, who couldn't throw it in the ocean, only came up with one free throw. The Volunteers were the higher ranked, more experienced, more battle-tested team, but it just didn't seem like an upset to me. This was a case of the more determined team, the hungrier team, and I think the better team coming out triumphant. It was a team that, to me, just wanted it more, despite an incredible amount of adversity. And they found a way on the shoulders of their backcourt. Javonte Smart and Skylar Mays, Louisiana-born and bred, the backcourt that combined for 52 points, 8 rebounds, 7 assists, and the two combined to play all but 30 seconds in regulation and overtime. They just played, man. They played. They shared the playmaking burden, and they double-handedly willed LSU to victory. They were spectacular. They really, really were. Will Wade talked about first, cut number 3. Man, when that place is packed and it's going, it's as loud as they come. The atmosphere, spectacular.
Just a great team win and a great atmosphere. I mean, that's as good as it gets for college basketball. Our fans to be here at 11 a.m. like that, the students, it was awesome. So hopefully everybody will come back on Tuesday night.
8 o'clock Tuesday night. Not going to have a hard sellout for that one. Texas A&M isn't ranked. That's just how it works, Will. That's not going to happen. But it still should be a very, very good crowd. Will Wade talked about Javonte Smart, the freshman from Scotlandville, his 29-point performance. You heard it in the tees. They just couldn't get him. They couldn't stop him from getting to the basket. Didn't shoot it great, but just kept driving and kept making plays. Here's the coach on his freshman's performance.
Javonte was phenomenal. I told somebody before the game, they said, what's it going to look like? I said, well, it's probably not going to be as aesthetically pleasing, but he's going to get the job done. And that's what he does. It won't look as crisp, but he's going to get the job done. And he's done that for us all season long. So very, very proud of him and Skylar Cavell with the double-double. And so I was just very, very proud of our team.
Cavell Bigby Williams is just a consummate team player. Doesn't need the ball to make him happy. He's going to do all the little things. And he had the big tip-in against Kentucky for the win. He had a huge tip-in against Tennessee to tie the ball game up late. Tennessee led 36-31 at the half. Will Wade talked about what turned things around in the second half.
I thought the second half we turned the game by getting the ball in the paint and being able to beat them in the paint. We were down 4 in the paint at halftime. I think we won by 8, so we were able to flip that. We were able to flip that by 12 points, and then being able to convert those points off turnovers, we won that by 8 and did a good job going to the free throw line as well.
With Naz Reid in foul trouble, going 0 for 9 from the field, 0 for 2 from downtown. He did get 7 rebounds. He did do some things defensively, but you had to go to the bench, and Darius Day stepped up in a 21-minute performance with 9 points, 4 rebounds, 2 steals before fouling out. Darius Days was significant in the ballgame, and his coach paid him some credit.
Great. Days was awesome. You guys all know I love him. I didn't play him enough in the Florida game. I screwed that up. I should have played him more in the Florida game. I think he gave us a great chance. And then, you know, it's just his size and the way he goes about things is phenomenal. And so I love what he brings to us on the court. And he's got a great spirit about him. We were big out there. You got Days at the three and Nas and Cavell out there and Javonte. And Scott. I mean, just got a big lineup. And there's a lot of things you can do with that defensively. It gives us a little bit more flexibility and versatility.
Tennessee's a really good club. They defend very, very well. LSU only shot 38.5% from the field, 32% from behind the three-point line. They did get to the free throw line an awful lot. They took 31 free throws. They made 24. They made more than Tennessee took, attempted. Tennessee attempted 16 free throws, made 12. LSU made 24 free throws. What does that tell you? They're driving the ball to the basket. They're taking the ball to the hoop. They're making things happen. Skylar Mays, 10 of 12 from the free throw line for 23 points total. Javonte Smart, 9 of 10 from the free throw line. His game high, 29 points. So they're going to the basket, driving, putting the call on the officials to make the call. And let me say this. Those officials need to be chastised, criticized, publicly admonished for the way they handled that game. Anthony Jordan, Orlandis Poole, and Bart Lennox. I have to go back and look. I don't know how many times they went to the review table to look over simple little things. You got to have some courage and stand by your convictions and stand by your call. You can't second guess everything and go to the table. You took away the whole rhythm of the game and the whole tempo. The game lasted like 2 hours and 40 minutes. I know there was a 5-minute overtime, but my goodness gracious, that thing screeched to a slow halt. The officials cannot do that. I know you want to get it right, but have some conviction and go with it. Go with it. Will Wade kind of summed it all about. You know, he's like any really successful coach. All right, that game is over, and it doesn't mean anything if they don't take care of their business in the next one.
It doesn't do much for you if we're not consistent. You know, we got 4 games left in SEC play. We got Texas A&M. You know, our problem hadn't been getting up for the big games. I mean, we've gotten up for the big games. The problem's been taking care of business against people at home. That's been the issue. So, I mean, we're, you know, when the lights are shining and the popcorn's popping, we've been pretty good when it's packed. And so we've got a new challenge ahead of us Tuesday night. Play a very good A&M team, a team that we beat the first time, but we did a great job on their best player that you can't necessarily count on that. And Tremont had a career night. And what did he go for, 36 or something like that there? And so it's a new challenge, and we got to turn the page tomorrow.
Still no word on Tremont Waters as to where Will said he's getting better. Now, if that's better to get him ready for Tuesday, I don't know. And he is right. Of the next 4 games, Texas A&M, not ranked. At Alabama, not ranked. At Florida. Now, we'll talk to Shelby Mast and see where Alabama and Florida are in his bracket. But and then they close things out with a team that's going nowhere, and that's Vanderbilt. So we'll see. And he's right. When the place is packed and everything's rolling, that's tough. That's tough. But can they do that on a consistent basis? We'll see. We shall see. Former LSU great Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, Chris Jackson, is on campus today. He's going to visit with the ball club. And we'll see. Naz Reid had one of those days. Will Wade said, look, he'll respond the right way. He hasn't had many days like that in his career. and I don't think we'll see any more in his career at LSU. Said just one of those days where nothing falls at all. So, got to stay hungry. You got to stay desperate. Every game from here on out is going to be huge. You're going for an SEC championship, and you're tied for first with two other teams. The stakes are high. There's a lot on the line. Everybody's playing for something. So throw out the records, and let's see what happens. But what that game does is that gives Javonte Smart all the confidence in the world. That gives Skylar Mays all the confidence in the world. That gives Darius Days all the confidence in the world. Cavell Bigby Williams, Emmett Williams, and he said Naz Reid's going to bounce back. Now you got a dangerous club that believes no matter what, we can still play. Quote Will Wade today, Tremont Waters is doing better. He's progressing. Whether or not he progresses to where he can play tomorrow night, I'm not sure. A&M has won 4 of 5 in the SEC. LSU has to win at home. All right, we'll take a quick timeout here. A little lengthy first segment, but LSU basketball deserves that. However, disturbing news coming out of Yahoo Sports dealing with Will Wade. We'll explain when we return.
Get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Three minutes after the hour, let's get quickly to this. Preliminary notifications. This according to Yahoo Sports and Pete Thamel. Preliminary notifications have been sent out to representatives of both Arizona basketball coach Sean Miller and LSU basketball coach Will Wade that they will be subpoenaed for the April 22nd federal basketball corruption trial. These notifications essentially are a courtesy to avoid a public spectacle for the coaches like getting served in the middle of a game or a practice. This is never, ever good. These impending subpoenas mark a potentially dynamic development in the college basketball corruption case. It creates the potential of two high-profile head coaches testifying in federal court about the details of the recruiting underworld, something that never manifested in the initial federal trial last fall. And it raises questions for the public, for the universities that employ them, as both the optics of potentially testifying in federal court about basketball recruiting and potential answers that could be given under oath, which will likely cause some issues for Arizona and LSU administrators if something comes about. Now, we've known about this for a while, as Will Wade, name emerged as part of a conversation with one of Adidas's runners. Last name was Dawkins. And, you know, he talking about a recruit. All right. And during some early hearings in the federal trial in October, one of Adidas executive Jim Gatto's attorneys read aloud a wiretap transcript where Wade and Dawkins were speaking about this recruit. Said that Wade and Dawkins were communicating him to get him what he needs, quote, meaning money, she said, in order to play at LSU. The conversation read this way. Would you want Balsa? Dawkins asked. Oh, the big guy, Wade responded. Dawkins confirmed. Okay, but there is other stuff involved in it, Wade said. Wait, I've got to shut the door. I can get you what you need, but it's got to work. Now, Wade went on to tell reporters at the SEC Media Days in October that he has, quote, never, ever done business of any kind with Christian Dawkins. But there's an expectation that Wade will appear on wiretaps talking about recruits other than what we just talked about. Now, when you have recruiting success and you're not a powerhouse year-in, year-out basketball school, red flags get raised. So when you get the top player from Connecticut and Trey Waters, you get the top player in New Jersey, Naz Reid, to come to Baton Rouge, flags are raised, and you get scrutinized. So Yahoo Sports reported in February of 2018 that Wade had drawn NCAA scrutiny for his recruiting at both VCU and LSU. Athletic Director Joe Oliva said the school had no contact from the NCAA, which is not abnormal in the early stages of NCAA inquiries. So again, there may be nothing to this. There may be something. All I know is when you get this type of publicity at this time of the year with what's going on, that's never good. And to be associated in the same breath as Sean Miller at Arizona, who I thought would have been fired a long time ago, but yet hasn't, well, it's not a good look. Let's just put it that way. So let's just, I'm not pointing a finger. I'm not saying anything but other what the report says. We will find out in due time. And hopefully, there is nothing to it because he's a heck of a coach. So stay tuned on that front. All right, timeout on the floor. When we come back, they're 7-0 with a busy five-game week this week. We'll get the latest lowdown on the number one ranked team in the college baseball polls, the LSU Tigers, with Brody Miller, NOLA.com, the Times-Picayune. That's next here on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. You're listening to The Jordy Hultberg Show.
Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, and on the app.
Uh-oh, here she comes. Yes, indeed. While LSU basketball stealing all the thunder because of the meteoric rise they're having this year, that other team across the way is just undefeated and cruising along. A sweep of Bryant. The Bulldogs have come, they have gone. And let's get kind of a recap on it from the guy who covers them for NOLA.com and the Times-Picayune, our good friend Brody Miller, kind enough to join us. Brody, how are you, sir?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you doing today, Jordy?
I'm doing terrific. All right, let's get down to the brass tacks of the matter. Question number one that everybody that follows LSU baseball had on their mind is, how is Zach Hess going to perform in his second outing? So he goes five innings, gives up one run. It was earned. Four hits, two bases on ball, six strikeouts. I can live with that. What did you see in him that was so much better?
Yeah, I think, obviously, like you said, it wasn't perfect. You know, I mean, he allowed one or two base runners every inning. You know, there were little things considering, because it's all relative, right? I mean, it was definitely a good outing, but it was right against Bryant, so there were some issues. But no, absolutely, it's not the demeanor. I mean, it was a genuinely good improvement. I mean, he said that, there was a lot of talk leading up to Friday's game that the big change he was making was with his leg kick, that he thinks his leg kick was too low the last few months and he wanted to get it back higher like it was at Team USA last summer, because he thinks that his foot was landing so early that his arm didn't have time to catch up and he couldn't get any kind of rhythm going when he pitched. So you definitely saw some more consistency. You know, you saw his secondary pitches, you know, his breaking ball, they looked much better than they did on opening weekend. And I think that's the most important thing for him is getting that command of those secondary pitches down, because we know he has a great fastball and we know he has good stuff, but if his secondary stuff's not working, as you know, I mean, he just becomes a one-pitch pitcher, and it doesn't matter how good your fastball is. If you're just a one-pitch pitcher for six innings, they're going to hit you. So I think there was definitely reason for optimism, I guess, just seeing him improve, and LSU hopes he will kind of keep refining those things as they go to Texas this weekend.
Eric Walker came in for relief, picks 1 2/3 innings. I think he's got a starter's mentality, and I think it's hard to bring a kid like that out of the bullpen to pitch a little bit. He had a little rough outing, 1 2/3, gave up three runs on one hit. The three runs were earned, no strikeouts, and uncharacteristically, and I think it has something to do with coming out of the bullpen, two bases on ball there. He walked a couple, and that's not like Eric Walker.
Absolutely, yeah. That is unlike Eric Walker, and it's tricky because, you know, he's gone out two times now. The first time he looked exactly like the old Eric Walker, yeah, when he pitched against you know, pitched against Yoel Monroe. He went 2 1/3, no walks, I think, one hit maybe. I mean, he looked fantastic there. And then you see him come out here, and he did look so much worse. And I think you're probably right. I think it's probably more of just a Justin come out of the bullpen thing. But, yeah, it's weird because you have such two polar opposite outings. So I think tomorrow's start, you know, he'll begin the start tomorrow against South Alabama at 6 o'clock in the box. So he will get the start tomorrow, and Cole Henry will pitch Wednesday. So I think that's going to be, you know, the really telling thing to see kind of if that does make a difference. And also just, yeah, it's his first time starting since June 2017. So even if you take out the first two starts, I mean, this is a big moment for Eric Walker, absolutely.
He is Brody Miller, NOLA.com, the Times-Picayune. So LSU has no trouble. They get all kind of hits, score all kind of runs, and then it's game two. And they get 17 runs on 14 hits. My goodness, Landon Marceau gets spotted a 3-0 lead already. What did you see in the newcomer in his second outing as he went 5 2/3?
Yeah, so he, you know, he wasn't exactly perfect. You know, he had some, you know, he had a really rough fourth inning, if I remember off the top of my head, on mm-hmm. Saturday, and you know he had some different issues that you're just not used to seeing out of him. He got hit. He missed his, you know, he walked some guys. You know, things you don't expect out of him. But I think, you know, I remember talking to Alan Dunn back, you know, last week of January, when camp started, and he was kind of saying, he's like, hey, we know who he is. We know what he can do. He knows his stuff. But what I want to see is what's going to happen when he finds himself in trouble for the first time. And, you know, because that's going to happen, obviously. He's going to go in the SEC, and he's going to have bad days. So what's it going to look like? And I think what Paul Maneri was most impressed with was that he, you know, he came out and pitched the rest of, you know, retired the next seven batters after having that brutal fourth inning. So, I mean, obviously, you know, it's kind of similar to Eric Walker where, you know, it's hard to judge. Two outings is always the tricky thing to judge by. Do you judge the bad one or do you judge the good one? So I think those probably – you probably weigh more towards the good, and then you see the way he recovered, which goes in hand with everything we keep hearing about this guy, about how much of a competitor he is and how even-keeled he is and how just kind of, you know, much of a pitching robot he is in a good way. I think that was the most encouraging thing from his Saturday performance.
Also in Saturday, Paul Maneri, which he has been known to do, trying to get Zach Watson for some reason, wasn't hitting the way they thought he should, so they moved him up to the two hole, and he responds Saturday going 2 for 2.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, there's a little bit of that I think it definitely does help him. I think he is a little better suited to being up the higher of the order. I don't think he's meant to be a five hitter in the sense of, you know, that the team needs him to drive in runs. But there's another thing that I think really helped with that is Sean Ochinco, you know, apparently kind of made a little tweak with him, you know, worked on getting his hands back. And Zach Watson, in his opinion, thinks that was actually the biggest difference, is that, you know, that little tweak, you just started feeling so much more comfortable. And you started, you know, the first game after he made that adjustment Saturday morning or Friday night was, you know, he started hitting the ball better. So I think there's a little bit of both. And then you see Zach Watson have that clutch at bat Sunday, which was, you know, that about kind of summarized everything you want to see improvement in Zach Watson, because he goes down 0-2, then he takes a pitch that you know, old Zach Watson absolutely would have swung at. He takes that pitch, and then he battles 4 off. It was almost something more of an Antoine Duplantis at bat than a Zach Watson at bat, and then he gets that hit that leads to the game winning run. So I think that's definitely a good sign. And that's the beauty, is that this first few weeks you're going to kind of iron some of these things out.
Brody Miller, NOLA.com, the Times-Picayune, kind enough to join us. We're talking LSU baseball. They're 7-0, and they've got South Alabama on Tuesday night. They've got Southern University on Wednesday night, both at the box before they head out. They'll travel Thursday, and then they'll play Texas Friday, Saturday, and Sunday up in Austin. Antoine Duplantis, my goodness, where's this newfound power coming from? He's got more home runs, 3, in 7 games that he had all of last season. What's up with this guy?
I know, I'm starting to feel bad for him because we've talked to him, I think, 4 times in the 7 games, you know, and it's every time we keep being like, okay, but for real, like, what's going on? Like, what do you think there's something to it? Do you think there's any sustainable thing here? And every time he just literally looks us in the eye and says, there's nothing really different. I'm swinging exactly as I've always swung. I'm just sticking to my approach. I've lost weight, if anything, and I just kind of – and they just keep kind of going out. And I don't think there's any rhyme or reason to it. I think he's just in the zone and, you know, some of those line drives – because it is true. I don't really think any of those home runs were really, you know, high-arcing swings or anything like that. He's just kind of driving some hard line drives that are going out. So, I mean, if you've hit 3 in 7 games, yeah, I'm probably going to believe that you're going to end with a decent amount this year. But I don't know if it's necessarily he's going to suddenly become a power hitter.
Gee whiz. But he is, he's got his average up to 400 for the season, which is really, really good. But, man, Josh Smith hitting 519. What a difference. I mean, he made a play in one of those games behind the bag that that looked Bregman-like, showed his arm. He let that thing rip.
I know. I'm glad you brought it up because we were joking in the press box, and it's like none of us have really written about Josh Smith yet this season because everything he's doing is kind of quiet. You know, it's just single. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't even think – I'm not sure if he has any RBIs this week. You know, it's all kind of quiet. But all of a sudden you look up and he's, you know, I think like 14 for 25 or 13 for 25 this season. He's just hitting the, you know, I mean, he's dominating. And like you said, he makes every single play that's near him in the infield. It's at a point where it's just a certainty when a ball goes anywhere up the middle that he's going to get it when other teams, that's a guaranteed infield single. So, I mean, he is. I mean, I would make it's between him and Duplantis as the best players right now, and that's a tough competition to have. But Josh Smith is dominating right now, and it's tricky because he has no one on when he hits, but I imagine that will change down the stretch. Josh Smith is absolutely looking like the star LSU expects him to be. I mean, they believed he would have been LSU's best player last year if he was healthy, so you would imagine that's probably the same as this year, and it definitely looks like it.
First base, boy, you got a lot of options there. Bianco comes up. This guy Duga is pretty darn good. And then you got the kid who I've lost his name now for the life of me. That hits Beloso, that hits the game-winning home run. Are they any closer? Do you think coming up with a solution there, or is this just going to be by feel, by who's hot and who's not?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it's genuinely – I don't know if it will ever be cemented in stone. You know, Palmieri even said yesterday, I think it's just – I don't. Unless, obviously, if Cade Beloso, you know, kept this up or something, I mean, yeah, he would probably have a pretty good hold on it. But in general, I mean, I think the idea is, you know, none of them are great defensively. I mean, they're probably all minus defenders, and mm-hmm. but they all have different strengths. So I think this weekend is the perfect example of it. You have – you know, Cade Beloso on, you know, is somebody who he's a lefty, so he can face right-handed pitchers. And then on Saturday, for example, they gave him the start because the wind was blowing outward, and they knew that would probably work for his power. So they said, all right, we're going to start him against this. And then on Sunday, they knew the wind was blowing in. All right, that's probably better suited for Gavin Duga because Gavin Duga is more of a line drive singles hitter. So I really think it's going to be pretty situational all season. You know, I think the more interesting thing to be is how does Drew Bianco kind of. Can he fight his way back into that? Because he will play, because as you know, Paul likes to keep those guys involved. He doesn't want anybody just kind of sitting out. But, I mean, 9 days ago, Drew Bianco was the starter, and honestly kind of seemed like he had a decent lead on it. And then all of a sudden, 5 days later, he's striking out 4 3 different times with runners in scoring position looking, you know, which is that's a no-no, obviously. You know, mm-hmm. I think that's what really angered Palmieri is saying, okay, if you strike out, that's one thing, but you have runners in scoring position, and you're not even going up there and trying to get your money's worth. So that's the main thing that cost him that spot for now. You know, he's definitely still in the rotation. We'll definitely still see him, but he's definitely behind Duga and Beloso right now. And Beloso probably has the number one spot right now, but I think I don't think it's drastic or anything like that.
Brody Miller, NOLA.com, the Times Picayune. One more thing. You mentioned something about a little heart-to-heart talk with the pitching staff with Alan Dunn. What was that all about?
Yeah, so, you know, Saturday night, you know, we requested Landon Marceau. I think we requested Aaron George as well. Or it's one other pitcher Saturday night, I forget who. And we're kind of sitting around waiting, and then we get told, like, they are having a very intense pitchers meeting right now. So, you know, we didn't get to talk to any of them. So we asked Todd Peterson about it Sunday, and he basically said, he's just like, AD, you know, Alan Dunn, he got on us. And I think – and the message of the meeting was pretty clear. I mean, LSU has had – you know, 8-10, you know, pretty massive leads in some of these games, and pretty much the relievers just aren't throwing strikes. And, I mean, you can get hit, and they're not going to get too mad at you. I mean, Palmieri is pretty forgiving of that. But when you're just walking guys with a 10-run lead and letting teams get back in games because you're just not throwing strikes, I mean, that was a pretty intense meeting from what I understand. And you know, pretty much just, it was just, hey, if you have a 10-run lead, trust your defense and let them do it. And, you know, I mean, it's very, very, very small sample size, but Sunday, Aaron George got a lot of praise for what, you know, for what he was able to do on Sunday, because he came in two really tough spots and he just threw strikes and trusted his defense and he pitched really well and got four straight out. So, you know, we'll see if the meeting last works in the long run, I suppose.
They've had a lot of close games, and they had to rally. And you know, game is tied against Bryant going into the seventh inning. LSU, as you mentioned, Zach Watson gets a very important at bat, and they come back and win it 4-3. That kind of builds some character, right? I mean, I think Paul's kind of liking some of that. I mean, maybe not on the inside, but on the outside, maybe he likes these close games early on.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah. I think he's obviously very happy in the micro sense, you know, of the each little thing going wrong. It's kind of driving him a little crazy. But I think in the grand sense, he realizes, okay, it's pretty relieving that we can start 7-0 even with all these problems and all these things that, you know, we're still ironing out. We're figuring this out. We're figuring out which lineup combinations work. You know, so when you can win games when still having these issues, and also, like you said, you can prove early in four of the first seven games have been close games. You can prove that you have some guys coming up in the clutch. You have you know, Antoine and Zach Watson, two veterans coming up in the clutch. And you have Cade Beloso, a freshman coming up in the clutch. So I think, yeah, there's a lot of the sense is, hey, if we're doing it right now with these problems, you know, we could be pretty dangerous down the road.
Brock Mathis can hit his way out of a paper bag, only batting 130, but he's good behind the plate, isn't he?
He is, yeah, and the greater sense, yes, he's been a fantastic catcher behind the plate. You know, he's really good at working with pitchers. He's really good at blocking pitches for the most part. You know, I think Sunday you started seeing some signs of him probably being fatigued, and Paul Benary admitted that. Brock Mathis would admit that. You know, he's caught every game so far for this team, and I think you started seeing some of those balls in the dirt that just kind of got past him because it's taken a toll. But, you know, I think the biggest concern, and, you know, we were all kind of torn during the game of whose fault it was. And, you know, people are stealing on LSU at will. They've been stolen on 15 times in seven games. They haven't thrown a single guy out. And we were starting to think, okay, it's just a Brock Mathis thing. Does he not have a good arm? It's a little hard to tell sometimes when you have chicken or the egg. And Paul Maneri was pretty clear saying, no, the absolute problem right now is our pitchers are taking way too long. And also there's some strategic things they could do better. You know, they could schedule pitch outs better, stuff like that. But mainly, it's a lot of the freshmen, too, to be fair. But a lot of these pitchers are just taking way too long to get to the plate. So by the time it gets to Mathis, he has no time. Absolutely.
Six stolen bases by Bryant on Sunday alone. So anyway, hey, 7-0 is 7-0. You got a busy week ahead of you, my friend. So get some rest, you know, take your vitamins, and be ready to go, all right?
All right, will do. Thanks for having me.
All right, Brody, thank you very much. Brody Miller, NOLA.com, The Times-Picayune, LSU. Busy, busy week. Tuesday, I don't know how. Clint, chime in here for me, big guy. We got LSU baseball at 6, but LSU basketball at 8. How does that work?
We just have LSU basketball on Tuesday night, and Wednesday night we'll have the Will Wade show, which will take precedence over that. Okay. So the next game we'll have on 103.7 The Game for baseball is going to be the three-game set against Texas.
Perfect. Perfect. Gotcha. It is basketball season. Baseball's got a long way to go. Well done. Thank you. You are the man in the know, as always, and you probably picked every winner of the Oscars and the Academy Awards, because I didn't see any of those movies, and I'm just so far behind the times. Anyway, time out. 49 minutes after the hour. This is the Jordy Helpert Show. 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. We'll be right back. Wrap it up. Hour number one next.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Helfer Show on 103.7 The Game.
All right, welcome back. This is interesting. One of the officials at the LSU-Tennessee basketball game, Anthony Jordan, has come under fire for a Twitter post he made in 2014 while posing with an LSU Tiger T-shirt in Europe while on vacation. Jordan was the official who called the foul on Tennessee's Grant Williams with 0.6 seconds left in overtime, sending Javonte Smart to the free throw line for the go-ahead points in the game. The Facebook post reads, "Strolling through D-Town Grenada, doing a little sightseeing, and look what I saw. To all my Bamas, go G-E-A-U-X Tigers." It's a gray LSU t-shirt, long sleeve. Jordan told the Associated Press he didn't mean to show favoritism toward any particular school. However, the SEC issued a statement on the post saying the post was not acceptable with the league's expectations and will proceed accordingly. At the end of the game, you heard Chris Blair saying that Rick Barnes is chasing after Jordan Poole because he made that call. Barnes, during his Monday SEC teleconference, said, "All I can tell you is I have trust and faith in the SEC office. I know they're going to do their due diligence and look at it. They will handle it the way it should be handled. That's all I can say about it." Barnes added he was in touch with the SEC for more than just the post. Quote, "I've been in contact with them since the game a couple different times. I appreciate them and how they talk to me and what we talk about. I have full confidence they are going to do the right thing. They understand the situation. They are as upset about it as we would be. They will handle it. We have to get ready to play another game." Well, what's he doing wearing an LSU? I mean, that's just not common sense. Just not common sense at all to do that. Anyway, just adds a little more fuel to the fire, right? A little fuel to the fire, a very controversial finish. LSU had the controversial tip with Cavell Bigby Williams against Kentucky that drew the ire of John Calipari and so forth and so on. And then this thing, going for a loose ball, it was clearly a foul. Normally officials will swallow the whistle on a play like that with just 0.6 seconds to go, but they didn't. They made the call, and the rest is history. So we'll see. Very, very interesting. These coaches are ultra, ultra competitive, and you get in that fire, line of fire during a ball game like that, man, that's that is something. So we'll see what happens to Anthony Jordan, who's officiated at a high level in the SEC for 19 years, including 11 assignments in NCAA postseason tournaments. So we will find out. Coming up, hour number two of the program, we'll find out where LSU is in the latest brackets for my bracketologist, Shelby Mast, bracketologist for USA Today. And we'll talk about the greatest college pole vault vaulter ever. And he's right from Acadiana. And he's got a brother that plays baseball pretty well as well. What a family. How proud of mama and papa. We'll talk about that as well. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show. Come on back. Hour number two next.
From the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pull off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 103.7 The Game mobile app and online at 103.7thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won!
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
It's hour number two of two, and away we go on this Monday, February 25th, the year 2019. School zones are in effect, so please be careful as you're out and about on the highways and byways. LSU senior defensive end Rashard Lawrence has undergone knee surgery, and he'll miss spring practice. The good news, he's expected to be a full go when preseason drills begin in August. The 15 or so spring practices begin on March the 7th, so Lawrence's absence will give several young defensive linemen all the reps they need this spring, which can only help to develop the depth along the defensive line. still to come in this hour. We'll talk bracketology with Shelby Mast, and we'll talk about the pole vaulter extraordinaire, Mondo Duplantis, who set the NCAA indoor record at 19 feet 5 inches, while his brother Antoine went 7 for 15 with 6 runs scored and 6 RBIs in a sweep of Bryant by LSU baseball. It's good to be in the Duplantis family. That's all coming your way in this hour, but we start each hour, each and every day, with our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, button please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
All right, how about that, the Duplantis brothers? Does it get any better than that, CD?
It really doesn't, Jordy. Just seeing those two guys just put up numbers. We, like I said, I think we definitely can say right now, almost without a doubt, that we're going to see Antoine Duplantis set the all-time SEC hit record at this point, right?
I'm with you. And I think Mondo Duplantis is going to be the world record holder in the pole vault sooner rather than later.
Oh, I think we can all agree on that one as well, because he's just such a talented guy. From the second before he even was part of LSU, the ability of what he's able to do in high school, imagine how well that translates to the collegiate level. And maybe in the next couple of years, you wind up seeing him in the Olympics, Jordy. An absolute stud all the way around. But we got to talk about a group of studs. That's LSU hoops getting things done with the win over Tennessee without Tremont Waters. We'll get to him in a minute. But, Jordy, I got to ask you, what was a more impressive top five win for LSU hoops? The win at Kentucky a couple weeks ago, or the one at home this past Saturday against Tennessee?
I think under the circumstances, not having your best player and having your power forward go 0 for 9 from the field and only register 1 point, I think it was more impressive that they won the way they did against Tennessee. I really do.
And I think we have to kind of consider that, because without Tremont Waters, I feel like this game could have gotten out of hand. That brings me to my next question, Jordy. Just be honest with us. Did you really expect LSU to win once you heard the news about Waters being out with an illness?
You know, I have been in situations as a player in front of that crowd, the way it is. And, you know, we played a Kentucky team that was number one in the country, and we were just young, but that crowd willed us. So I thought there was a chance. I really did. Now, when they were down late in the game like they were, I'm like, oh, I don't know. But they just figured it out, man. And look, that's a confidence builder for everyone. We can still win basketball games, even if Tremont doesn't have a good game or doesn't play at all. Even if Naz doesn't have a good game scoring-wise, we can figure out a way and we can manufacture things. And that three-headed backcourt of Waters and Mays and Smart, I'm going to tell you, that's good luck playing. Nobody wants to play LSU in the tournament, I can promise you.
Oh, I'm about to say, I don't think anybody wants to play LSU in the regular season right now, Jordy, because they have been hot, especially once the calendar flipped over to January to start the year. They were just on another level. And a team that's kind of on a different level than what we had seen prior to the All-Star break. They're doing it the worst possible time, Jordy. The New Orleans Pelicans getting a couple of wins to start off post All-Star break basketball. But they wound up having a little fun with their social media, Jordy, saying they won in good faith against the Los Angeles Lakers. How great is that? Just petty as all get out about the whole situation.
I love it. AD sitting out. The Lakers desperate, needing wins to try and get into the playoff race. And the Pelicans come up and win it. So, you know what? Okay, get that one. Now lose every other game. Like the New York Knicks fans are all screaming, why do you win? Keep losing. I guess they did it because Spike Lee was not going to win the Academy Award for Best Picture, although he did one for screenwriting.
Yeah.
Whatever.
That was great, actually, how you had Samuel L. Jackson tell Spike Lee, oh, hey, the Knicks beat the Spurs last night during the Oscars. I'm like, you know, that's just great in general, because you've got to imagine how many Knicks fans were probably watching the Oscars because, well, the Knicks aren't that good. I haven't been good for a while.
I'm with you, but they want to lose, and I keep telling the Pelicans, keep losing, please.
They're just not listening at this point in time, Jordy. It is what it is. But I just saw this pop up, some breaking news coming out in the last couple of minutes. It's some really good news about a former LSU quarterback, Zach Mettenberger, finally getting the start for the Memphis Express.
Two touchdowns
in his debut, Jordy. I am so happy to see that. And now he's finally going to get his first start in the AAF. I'd say maybe you see that team turn their hopes around because they started out 0-3. And they almost beat the Orlando Apollos on Saturday, Jordy, if not for, you know, you put in your boy Mettenberger in, not as a starter, but in the second half when it was pretty much out of hand.
Who was the quarterback? Hacken, that guy? He's done.
Hacken
from Penn State? He's
Hackenbum. Hackenbum, Jordy.
He's awful. So good for Mettenberger. Just keep, you know, it beats working for a living, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So
you know,
keep going. Good for him.
Exactly. It's some great stuff right now involving the former LSU Tiger, former Pittsburgh Steeler as well, had his time to shine. But now we're going to talk about some actual NFL football news because this came out earlier today, Jordy. The NFL, according to a report, is looking to ban players from coming off the sidelines to celebrate with their teammates. And a lot of people, of course, they're drawing correlations between that new rule that could be coming up along with the New Orleans Saints and how they did their turnover celebrations.
Yeah.
Is this targeted directly towards them, or is this just kind of like, let's cool it with all the team celebrations?
I think the team celebrations. I think the latter rather than the former. And I got to be honest with you. I was a little getting tired of every time you get a turnover, you run all the way down the field into the sideline and pose for the pictures. Okay, that's we can figure something else out. I was getting kind of tired of that, to be quite honest with you. That's just me. But, hey, whatever. I don't think that's directed just at the Saints because other teams did that as well.
Well,
everybody, it's a copycat league, and so other teams started to do that. So,
exactly.
Whatever.
Exactly. Everybody started taking it from the Saints, and that's why they're doing it rather than, oh, hey, the Saints are the guys that we just want to punish every single chance we can get. It's great to see that, though, Jordy. And Bryce, sorry, Jordy, go on.
No, go ahead. No, I'm with you.
All right, last one here, Jordy. Bryce Harper, he's supposed to be picking his team this week, Jordy. So it's got me wondering. It's probably going to be either the Phillies or the Dodgers. Where do you think he's going?
L.A. or cold Philly? I'm L.A. all the way. With that pitching staff, I'm L.A. all the way. If the money's equal, Chavez Ravine, no doubt, no question. None whatsoever. There's your hot topics for the day because it's hot there. Too cold in Philly this time. No. All right, there you go. Hot topics brought to you by, the best hot sauce ever, and that is Cajun Chef Hot Sauce. Bring a little small bottle with you wherever you go because you know you're going to get the best. And everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. Yes, indeed. LSU basketball, 13th in the AP, 15th in the coaches poll. Where are they in the bracket? That's what's the most important thing. Shelby Mass will deliver the...
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.
Days away from Selection Sunday, 23 days before the NCAA tournament begins. LSU with a loss at home earlier in the week to Florida, and then the big win over Tennessee on Saturday. LSU in the rankings, in the polls. They're number 13 in the AP, number 14 in the coaches' poll. So let's bring in our bracketologist for his weekly session with us, Bracket WAG, the one and only Shelby Mass, bracketologist for USA Today, collegeinsider.com, et cetera, et cetera. So, Shelby, every game becomes significant. You can throw the records out the window as far as I'm concerned. What did that loss to Florida do to LSU, and then how significant was it that they beat Tennessee at home without their best player, Trey Waters, playing?
Yeah, that Florida game, that one kind of stuck with me. It knocked them down to the four line, but then to come back and get that big win shorthanded, I put them back on the three line. They're still my last three seed, but they are there and looking a little bit more firm than they did.
It's got to build some confidence for them, don't you think? I mean, Waters goes out, doesn't play at all. Naz Reid gets in early foul trouble, only scores 1 point. And they beat the fifth-ranked team in the country. A nail-biter, no question about that. But they figured out a way. That's got to mean something.
Yeah, I gotta believe it does. That should help boost their confidence if it wasn't boosted already. That's an impressive win. Even though the refs did what they could to make the game last forever, that was horrible. And awesome. I hope those refs were chastised after that. But still, they got the win, and that's what counts.
It's like those refs were afraid to make a call. They were like, oh, God, I can't do this. I got to go back and review it. I mean, it just slowed down the pace of everything. Although I do believe it helped LSU because they were tired. They didn't play many players. It basically kind of helped LSU a little bit.
Yeah, I think it probably did. And fair or not, who knows, it gets both teams out of a flow. It lets both teams rest up. But still, at that point of the game, you want to be in a flow. You want things to go, and let's see who wins. If the refs don't feel confident enough to make the calls without going to the monitor every single time, then they need to look for a new line of work.
He is Shelby Mass, bracket WAG. Okay, so since last we talked, Duke loses their star player, Zion Williamson, in the early stages of the game Wednesday at home against North Carolina. They dropped to 24-3. I would imagine Duke's still on your one line, but are they your number one seed?
Yeah, after they took out Syracuse at Syracuse on Saturday, that kept them as my number one overall, followed by Virginia. And Kentucky has now moved up to the one line as well.
Okay. Gonzaga, very quiet, 27-2. They just don't play anybody, do they?
Not in conference, really. Their conference is a little bit better than it has been this year, but they don't have a good rival, a good foe that you say, watch out for that team. San Francisco was better. St. Mary's is always pretty good. I think San Diego was a little bit better, but still not good enough to challenge Gonzaga. They're really, really good.
Is this Mark Few's best Gonzaga team in your viewpoint?
It very well could be. His team that got to the championship game a couple years ago was very, very good. This one, I think, is probably a little bit deeper and has more players that they rely on. They're going to be one of the favorites to cut down the nets.
Shelby, Michigan State made a statement to me going into Ann Arbor and beating the Michigan Wolverines without their top two scorers in the game. That tells me a lot about Tom Izzo's club again. Looks like they're ready and getting better at the right time.
Yeah, that was a team I really had my eye on to see how they did play down the stretch without two of their top three guys, and winning at Michigan, man, that's impressive. I was ready to move them to the three line because without those two guys, it's basically a different team that you're looking at and judging right now, and they passed, so they stay on the two line.
Tennessee, I'm curious. They lose pretty handily at Kentucky. Now, that's not something to be ashamed of, and they lose in overtime to LSU, now 24-3. What are your thoughts, and where do you have the Vols?
Yeah, I moved Tennessee down to the two line and actually below North Carolina, who has had some impressive wins. The Duke win last week, even though Duke was shorthanded, and then beating Florida State the way they did on Saturday, that they look to me like the best two seed, and they are absolutely in the running for a one seed. Tennessee can still get back to the one line, but they've got work to do, and I think they need some help elsewhere as well.
Yeah, and they're going to have to beat Kentucky in Knoxville later on in the season. You mentioned LSU as your last number three seed. Give me the order of your three seeds.
First is Marquette, then Houston, then Purdue, and then LSU.
Okay, Purdue's 20-7, LSU's 22-5. What is your reasoning why LSU is behind Purdue? LSU beat Kentucky, they beat Tennessee. There are two teams ahead of them. One is a one seed, one's a two seed. So what's the theory behind that?
Those two are very close for me. What cinches it for me is Purdue has more quad one wins than LSU does. And with the committee emphasizing the quad one and two wins, okay, I think that's enough to just bump them up enough.
Huge matchup this week, Kansas State. Give me your thoughts on that. And they're both, I see, on your four seed line. Major ramifications here.
Yeah, I don't see a team falling to the five line, really, but one of them will have a stranglehold on the four line. And Kansas could get back to the three line. I'm not sure Kansas State could, but Kansas absolutely could. Kansas is missing two of the top players. They've been missing them for a while. They started off pretty good without them. But then that game against Texas Tech on Saturday, it was never close. They were never in that game. That didn't look like any Kansas team I'd ever seen before. And so if that's how they're going to play, they're going to have trouble hanging on to a four seed. They could slip to a five. I think probably Kansas gets the win. This is their big rival. Kansas State, they're good, no doubt about it. They're about where we thought they should be coming into the season. They had a rough patch early in the season. They had some injury issues. They seem to be putting things together right now. Leading the conference by two games, that's no easy feat.
Shelby Mass Bracket, WAG, USA Today, bracketologist. I'm curious, getting back to LSU, they played the bulk of their schedule. Now, they've got four remaining games. Texas A&M, not ranked, not going into the tournament. At Alabama, you've got Alabama as your last four in. They're at Florida. You've got Florida as a 10th seed, and they close out the regular season with Vanderbilt. When you look at that schedule, can LSU improve their seeding from a 3 to a 2 with that schedule, or is 3 the best they've got?
There is a chance they could get up to the 2 line. They need some things to happen above them, some other teams to lose. And we know Kentucky and Tennessee, they play each other, so one of them is going to lose. Mm-hmm. I think if you get a couple losses by teams above them, and if they sweep those last few games, they have a real good shot of getting up to the 2 line.
What would a loss to one of those four teams do to LSU? How low can they slip?
Probably a 4 is about as low as they could go. You don't want to lose your home games. Losing on the road to those two, Alabama and Florida, there's no shame in that because as of right now, they're a tournament team. Whether they will become Selection Sunday or not, I don't know, but at least they will be in the discussion. So no shame in those losses. Don't want to lose both of them because that would prevent you from moving higher. But the home games, you got to win those. If you don't win both of those home games, then 3 is your ceiling and probably 4 is where you land.
Shelby, we know Kentucky, we know Tennessee, we know LSU. Who's your next highest-rated SEC team?
Mississippi State. They have done a really good job with their schedule. They've got, I think it's 6 or 7 quad one wins. They've really kind of snuck up on a lot of people. I think Tennessee, Kentucky, and LSU are taking all the spotlight away from everybody else. And I don't think Mississippi State runs that too much. They're just chugging right along, getting their wins. And following behind them, you got Ole Miss. Auburn is still kind of iffy. I'm not 100% sold on Auburn. They've got good metrics, a good schedule, but they don't have that many good wins. I think it's just one quadrant one win, and that's going to hurt their seeding. And if they lose a few more like they did Saturday to Kentucky, that might knock them out.
And got beat soundly by Kentucky. Yeah. How huge of a win was that for Florida to come to Baton Rouge and beat LSU?
That was huge. They were one of my last four teams in going into that game. I have been doing what I can to hold off putting them in. I don't dislike Florida. I dislike where they were. Their resume just screamed NIT team. They needed to have a big win, and they needed it bad Wednesday, and they got it. That was huge for them.
Anybody make a huge jump for you from the outside to get inside, or anybody make a precipitous fall this week?
Well, Seton Hall and Minnesota are doing what they can to play themselves out. Okay. Nobody has really zoomed in, but there's a team I'm keeping an eye on in the Southeast Conference that just won't go away. I know they lost this weekend, the South Carolina. They're sitting at 13-13. They've got a home game versus Bama, home versus Georgia, at Missouri, at Texas A&M. All four of those games are winnable. I'd put them at 17-13, and that's a team I don't want to play in the Southeast Conference tournament because they could get hot. They've got players left from that team that went to the Final Four a couple years ago.
Shelby Mast, all right, we're getting really, really close. Everything becomes significant. They can follow you on Twitter. They can follow you. Go to Bracket WAG. And tell me about this playbalto.com. What is that all about?
All right, I partnered with this group, and it's kind of a cool thing. There's all kinds of bracket pools out there. You can pay money to, and if you win the whole thing, you win X amount of dollars, whatever. This one's free to play. I think you can set it up where it's a pay to play, but if you don't want to do that, which I don't, it's free to play. If you win, you get $1,000. If you refer people, and one of the people that you refer, if they win, you get $5,000. So they want you to refer as many people as you can, and if your guy wins, then, hey, you get more money than they do. I just thought that was a neat idea. It's something I've never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
And free to play.
Play Balto, PlayBalto.com, in case you...
Right. My bracket group is called Bracket Wag, and the code to get in is 95999. The more people that sign up, the better chance we got of winning.
I'm going to refer some people. Heck, there I want go. The 5,000, not the 1,000. Yes. Let
yeah,
them
yeah.
win. Let me win the other end of it. Anyway.
I'll take all upsets the whole way. Let them win.
There you go. All right, so in summation, LSU, as high as they could go, would be a 2 seed. You think as low as they could drop is a 4 seed. That's not bad.
That's not bad. That's realistic. That's assuming they don't lose all 4 of their last games.
Gotcha.
They lose
gotcha.
All those, then we're talking worse than that. But I just don't think that's going to happen.
Shelby Mast, Bracket WAG. We'll talk to you next week, my friend. Thank you so much.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me, as always.
All right, we'll take a timeout. We'll come back with more. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, Acadiana's number one sports station. Before the season, would you take that? As high as a 2, as low as a 4? I think so. What a season of hoops at LSU.
Your run's not there.
And there's the new collegiate record. Mondo Duplantis in his fourth meet of being a collegiate.
Lafayette's finest, Mondo Duplantis, a collegiate record on the way to winning the pole vault at the recently completed SEC Championships at Randall Tyson Track Center in Fayetteville, Arkansas. We are thrilled to have the head coach of the LSU track and field team, the very successful Dennis Shaver, to join us today. And Dennis, thanks for the time, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing good, Jordy. Doing real good.
That's awesome. The NCAA meet is around the corner. Then the outdoor season starts. But I had to get you on to talk about Mondo, 19 feet, 5 inches. I know they do it in meters, but I like the 19 feet, 5 inches to win the pole vault. You had a front row seat for that thing. How spectacular was that?
I tell you, it was totally awesome. First of all, he's been chasing that, all
yep.
season long when he's vaulted. And having the opportunity to do it in a championship meet with the stadium clear full was just an awesome experience to be there when it happened. And the interesting thing about it is that, as soon as the pole vault was over, there were several other events going on that night. But about half of the crowd left after the pole vault was over. Just goes to show you how many people showed up to watch the pole vault.
Oh, my goodness gracious. He had attempted, to your point, to try and break the record 9 times this season, 3 at the Razorback Invitational back January 26th, and he had 6 other attempts inside the Carl Maddox Fieldhouse. Did you have a premonition that this was going to be the one? And if so, how did you know?
Well, yeah, we really did. I think the big part of it was for Mondo was, he's a very hard worker and he's been training really hard, been experimenting with some different pole sizes in the pole mm-hmm. vault, trying to figure out, okay, what do I need to do, come championship time? And fortunately, then you rest them up a little bit for those championship meets and all of a sudden they're able to elevate their performance at 1%, which is about what he did. And so it was just spectacular to see him not only win like he did, but also set that collegiate record. That record had been there for quite some time. And I still say, not to put any pressure on Mondo, but he's just such a tremendous person, a great student athlete on our team. We're fortunate to have him. And I'm praying someday, and I'm sure he'll break that world record in the pole vault outdoors.
Unbelievable. You were right. The record was set back in 2015. I excuse my ignorance on this, but there's got to be a starting point. So does Mondo decide what height he wants to start off at, or is that something mandated by the SEC and meet officials?
No, what they're before the meet starts, the progressions of the vault are determined based upon many factors, what it might take to qualify for NCAAs. Okay. And then it's up to each individual athlete. They can pass each height until they want to jump. And typically Mondo's going to pass until the bar gets up to about 18.4 or so, 18.6, okay. And that's when he'll come in, and that's what he did this weekend, because obviously we don't want him, and he doesn't want to take any more jumps than he has to take, you know, just to save his energy, because obviously, you know, you're running down that runway full speed and you plant that pole. I mean, you know, there's a little bit of damage takes place to the body. You don't want to do any more jumps than you have to before you're jumping at that collegiate record.
Plus, I got to believe it's a psychological thing. Oh, I'll pass on that. What? That's as high as I've ever done. What are you passing on that? Oh, man, I'm in trouble, right?
Yeah, that makes the head coach a little nervous sometimes, but you just got to believe they know what they're doing.
How heavy is the pole, and how fast is that dude running down the track?
Well, you know, Mondo, if you remember right, last year at the state outdoor championship meet, you know, he was about third or fourth in the 100 meters for his classification at the state meet, so he's got really good speed. And as far as what the poles weigh, you're asking totally the wrong person. I wouldn't know. But I do know this, that I carried the pole bag. It has several poles in it.
It's heavy.
And it was just about all I wanted to carry when we were trying to put it on the bus. But, you know, that's one of the duties of the head coach, make sure the poles get there.
Make sure the pole gets there. And it was obviously a Swedish indoor record. This is another silly question, but is it better for a pole vaulter to have more success indoors where the conditions are always right, or is outdoors, because I don't know, is outdoors better? I don't know.
You know, typically, you know, outdoors when the conditions are good, it's better outdoors, particularly when you get a little bit of a tailwind, which you don't ever have that boost indoors.
Okay.
Yeah, typically, you know, you catch a really good weather day like we typically have here in Baton Rouge in April and May. You know, we need everybody to come out and see him taking some shots at the outdoor collegiate record, too.
Tell me about the kid. I mean, this is in Acadiana, so he might be the most famous. He's got to be the most famous athlete on campus, world known. Tell me about the young man.
Well, you know, we're just blessed to have him on our team because he's, you know, number one, and I tell people this, he's really a team guy. Last year, you know, he long jumped, ran the 100, and pole vaulted at the state meet trying to help his team win the state championship. You know, he's a team guy. And, mm-hmm. and Jordy, you know, the team is what's important here at LSU to the head coach, Dennis Shaver, and to our staff. So it's great to have a leader like that. And, you know, I have to say kudos to all of our jumpers, you know, and I don't want to give Mondo all the credit.
Right.
But I know when you have somebody that has that kind of energy and that kind of attitude and that kind of competitiveness, it does rub off on teammates. And our jumpers just had a superb meet at the SEC, and I know that they're going to do it at NCAAs because they've consistently been doing it all indoor season. And I think he's a big part of that happening.
You've had the Bowerman Award winner before, which is the Heisman Trophy of track and field. You've had Olympic champions, NCAA champions out the wazoo, sprinters, everything. I guess they all have the same kind of makeup, right? I mean, the competitive nature that they possess and the work ethic that they exhibit, I would imagine that's kind of similar that runs through all of them.
It sure does, and those are all the same kind of characteristics that we see on a daily basis from Mondo. You know, very confident in their ability, very much a student of their event. They not only study themselves, but they study all of those that are great before them and the ones that are great while they're being great. You know, so Mondo, I think, without any question, has those characteristics, much like many of the previous people we've had in our program, and that's the real key. Those great ones, they all have that what we call that little swagger about them, and we know what that means. We see it in football, we see it in basketball, we see it in everything. Just somebody that, you know, that takes charge when it counts the very most, and that's what we preach here. And so it's just totally awesome to see them have that kind of success when it counts the very most, which is championship time, which we're in that segment of our sport right now with the SECs and the upcoming NCAAs in about 10 days in Birmingham.
What's it like on that campus? I mean, you got both your men's and women's teams ranked in the top five. Baseball's number one. Basketball just had a huge win there. They're in the top 25. They're going to be a lock for the NCAA tournament. Football is still football. Gymnastic. I mean, what's it like on that campus?
It's just awesome. It's awesome. And I think the camaraderie, you know, that goes on throughout the athletics department has really been elevated, particularly this year. You know, all the teams are, you know, and really, you know, football obviously gets the year started for everybody. And
right.
And for football to be on that kind of a roll and Coach O and his staff working so hard, it just bleeds on to everybody else, you know. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, the men's basketball team obviously having great success. Gymnastics, you know, Coach Didi, we can't say enough great things about Coach Didi and what she does here in the department. You know, and of course we're always trying to be in the hunt in indoor and outdoor track with both of our teams.
And
yeah, we have been. We're fortunate. But you know what, Jordy, it's the great athletes like Mondo that's what makes that possible for us. And you know, a guy like Mondo had a lot of different options to consider, but you know, I think a lifelong dream of his was to represent LSU in the purple and gold, and I think that just means so much to kids like him, and that rubs off on all those others too. Yeah. About how important it is.
It's got to be a sibling rivalry. I mean, he just sets the indoor collegiate record in the pole vault, and his brother's knocking the cover off the ball for Palminteri in baseball. How fun! I would imagine they're texting back and forth to one another.
Oh yeah, there's a constant. They're a very competitive family. There's a lot of things going on. I know when Mondo attempted the collegiate record here in the field house a few weeks ago and he didn't get it, was the same night that his brother hit two home runs in the same baseball game for a win, and that matched his season best the previous year before. Antoine hit two in one night, you know, and now all of a sudden he's hit another one this weekend. So, yeah, there's a little bit of jabbing goes on, a little bit of smack talk goes on back and forth. So, you know, both of them are very competitive people, and what a great family. I mean, Mom and Dad both competed for us here in track and field, and their contributions that they've made and the whole family have made to LSU is just it's phenomenal. We're very appreciative of it.
Dennis Shaver, LSU track and field coach, getting ready for the NCAA Indoor Championships in Birmingham, and then just a few days later, the outdoor season begins, so it's no time for rest. 19-5, that's unbelievable. What's the outdoor record? Is there a bigger mark?
You know, I live in the now.
Okay.
And so I don't even know what it is outdoors.
I bet your Mondo does. I bet you he knows.
He does too.
Yeah.
But I do know that he's going to be jumping at it for sure and has that opportunity, no question about it.
I'm curious, you mentioned that he had plenty of options. I can't imagine another school coming in to try and get him to go somewhere else. I don't know, but what other options? Could he have just said, I'm going pro here and now? Is that something that was possibilities?
He definitely would have had that option and could have taken that option. And that option's always going to be available to him, particularly as he progresses like what he's doing now. But he definitely could have signed contract and gotten sponsorship and so forth, and probably been very lucrative deal for him. But you know, like I said, you know, that's what I love about him is that you know he just always, you know, growing up dreamed of jumping in the purple and gold and representing LSU, and so it was never really much of a challenge. Although there were other schools that recruited him,
not sure.
But at the end of the day. You know, obviously we were hot and heavy, you know, on him from the get-go too, and encouraging him about all the things that, you know, that he could do for our team and that LSU could do for him, just like his brother. So, you know, it was a win-win for everybody when he decided not to go pro at that stage and enroll here at LSU and jump for our squad.
I'm kind of curious, when did, you know, you see things with football coaches offering eighth grader scholarships. When did you know that this kid was really something different?
Well, I think when he was about six, you know, and he was, for every age group since he was that young, for every age group, he has set the world record in the pole vault.
I'll
so for every age group, all the way growing up, so it's pretty special, and so We had that opportunity when he was in junior high. Of course, once he got into high school, we couldn't talk to him until his junior year. Mm-hmm. But one of those things, we knew he was going to be a great one. And we're lucky we have him. And you know, maybe, who knows, outdoors he might do more than just vault for us. I mean, you know, he's talking about maybe running on the 4x1 and like he did in high school. So we'll see how it goes.
Well, I know it's a team effort, and I don't mean to slight all your other sensational athletes. It's all about the points and the team and all, but you got a unique one here, and I just had to ask about him, and I greatly appreciate the time. And I got a funny feeling you need to start keeping attendance figures more so than ever before, because I think you're going to set records meet in and meet out at the old Bernie Moore track and field. I think that's happening.
Well, we certainly hope so, Jordy, and it's great. I appreciate, you know, it's always great to have, you know, great athletes on your team, but when they're from Louisiana and from a family like Duplantis's, it is definitely special. And I appreciate the time on the radio too.
You're the best, Dennis Shaver. Good luck in the NCAAs, my friend. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Jordy.
All righty, Dennis Shaver, track and field coach for the LSU Tigers. Again, Mondo getting it done, 19 feet 5 inches. Holy cow! Amazing. And just a freshman. The world record. It's going to happen. We'll be back. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. Back to wrap things up next. Welcome back. Finishing touches of this Monday edition of the Jordy Helfrich Show. We touched on just about everything you can imagine. LSU baseball with Brody Miller. Tigers have South Alabama tomorrow night at 6 o'clock. LSU basketball tomorrow night against Texas A&M at 8 p.m. So we've got all of that. Shelby Mass talking about his bracket. LSU currently a 3 seed with 4 games left and hunting that elusive SEC regular season championship. And then Dennis Shaver with just like a proud papa talking about Mondo Duplantis, the new collegiate indoor pole vault record holder, just a freshman and getting it done. And it's just going to get bigger and higher and better along the way. There is no question. There is no doubt. All right, let's go our daily history lesson that we do each and every day. We go back 55 years ago. On this day, February 25th, a young man by the name of, his name was Cassius Clay, but Muhammad Ali shook up the world. Then known as Cassius Clay, 22-year-old Ali defeated Sonny Liston as a 7-1 underdog to win his first heavyweight title. It was back on this day, February 25th, 1964, the beginning of the greatest, Muhammad Ali. All right, birthday wishes. If today is your birthday, happy birthday from all of us to all of you here from 103.7 The Game. Delta Media. Hope you have a spectacular day. Lots of cake and lots of ice cream to go along with it. You share the day with happy 69th birthday. Woo! Ric Flair, the nature boy, celebrating a birthday today. I don't know whatever happened, but happy 53rd birthday to Carrot Top. Pulls all that stuff out of a bag. That was pretty funny back in the day. And I can't believe Joakim Noah, happy 33rd birthday to the former Florida Gator hoopster of back-to-back national championships under the direction of Billy Donovan. On the LSU front, terrific basketball player for Leesville Wampus Cat, Nikita Wilson, celebrating a birthday today. Former LSU player, now current UNO head baseball coach Blake Dean, celebrating a birthday, and a nice bounce back performance and a happy birthday today to LSU's Friday night starting pitcher, Zach Hess, So happy birthday to all of them, and happy birthday to you. If it's your anniversary, happy, happy, happy anniversary. Hope you keep adding year after year after year to it. So not the greatest of news. Whenever you're going to be subpoenaed and by the FBI and the college basketball case that the FBI, the Sting, and Will Wade being involved in that, going to have to subpoena. That's never good news. We'll see. We'll see how that all develops. But LSU basketball tomorrow hosting Texas A&M. We'll preview that on the program tomorrow. John Brady will join us. LSU baseball versus a good South Alabama team. Can the Tigers make it 8-0 on the season? And the Raging Cajuns need to bounce back in a big way before Maryland comes to town. They are, golly, just one win in seven games so far. So Tony Robes Club looking to get something done against a very good Southeastern team. And they play that ball game in Hammond. And that is a 6 o'clock first pitch. So we've got a lot to talk about tomorrow. So look, I hope you have a great, great rest of your afternoon and evening. And come on back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4, same great station, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. CD, thank you for all your work. Thanks to all of you for listening, to our partners that make it possible each and every day. We literally could not do it without you, and we are greatly appreciative of you every day. We have only one of these Mondays. It's the last Monday in February, the 25th day of the month. Make it the best day you can. Until then, and next time, I'm Jordy Helper. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.